Hey everyone, welcome back. We have made it to Wednesday. Mm-hmm. What is Wednesday called?
Spy Wednesday.
Spy yep. Wednesday.
Spy Wednesday.
Okay, yep. Who's the spy?
Oh my gosh, come
I'm
on.
Just kidding, I know. Yeah.
Brian.
All right, let's talk about so Judas. Yeah, so today is focusing on Judas or us. they kind of hold hands, and so our experience through each of these podcasts and through each of these days on the church calendar, that the goal is to turn inward and ask Jesus to show us things that have not been seen before. And so it isn't just an external processing of a stories, but it's to internalize the story that's happened. So we had Palm Sunday, and then we had Holy Monday. Mm-hmm. And then we had the great Holy Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And then today is Spy Wednesday.
Yeah. Yep. And just to interrupt, if you have not listened to those, go stop now. Go back. Listen to those. So.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about Judas. Okay. So yesterday we talked about how we share a compassion for the Pharisees. I would guess we both probably share a compassion for Judas at the same time too.
Yeah.
Am I wrong in thinking that?
You are definitely correct. Okay. I think he gets beat up pretty bad, and it's understandable. But I'm a perspective
Nobody
guy
names
in
their
context.
Kid Judas out of the Bible, right?
Not anymore.
Yeah. So today's focus is on the betrayal of. Mm-hmm. Jesus mm-hmm. and the character of Judas. It's kind of funny though, because it's kind of how do we say this? So it's on the preemptive act of betrayal. It's not about the whole act of betrayal, because the experience of the supper, the final supper, that's on Thursday. Yep. So the actual happening of the action of betrayal isn't here yet. However, the intention of betrayal has totally happened.
Yep, the stage is set.
Yes.
Like, things are inevitable.
So inside the heart of Judas, things have been happening, or inside the head. It's possible. I would even say, I don't think he understood in his heart the thing that's happening yet.
Yep.
But inside his head, there was a plan. Why? And so as like a perspectives guy, I'm always like being like, how did this happen? Why is he doing this? And then the guilt afterwards is perplexing, right?
Yep.
So I mean like he was surprised by something.
Yep.
Okay. So tell us a bit about the character of Judas, who he is, his history, background. I'm assuming that
A little
so
bit.
So I'm kind of tossing you in in the deep end. I'm sorry, but let's hear from you.
And I always assume you know more than me. Ooh. So it's going to go back and forth.
It's like playing table tennis.
So you're wrong. Yeah.
Okay, so Judas Iscariot. There was a group of people that lived in an area called Cariot. So Iscariot, Judas from Cariot. Yep. And this area... was associated with the zealots. Mm-hmm. So we talked about the zealots.
Throughout the Gospels, he's typically called Judas the Zealot, or is Judas...
Yeah.
So that's very important. That is an important qualifier to the character of Judas.
Yep. Okay. So we talked on Monday, the zealots were the group of people that were fed up with Roman occupation. They felt like it was their holy, God-given right to, through force, cast out these opposing forces through violence. You could even say...
Politics, too.
Yeah,
like,
politics,
they're very heavy into politics.
Yep, you could even go far to say is like, terrorism wouldn't be too far off of a word. Assassinations, like, they were like... Yeah, like, again, eventually it became a crucifiable offense to wave the symbol of the zealots. Yeah, because they were for revolution. And a lot of the Jewish people, they understood the Messiah who was to come to be the one that was going to free them from this, like, oppression of empire. And, like, they would be free in the traditional sense, which I think if we had not heard of any of this before, we would default to the same perspective. Like, we couldn't imagine anything bigger or better than that. And so I would like to believe that Judas maybe was like hearing some of the, because Jesus, he spoke in like parables and he spoke kind of vaguely, like we talked about like last week, he like hinted towards things and he gave the space for people to come to their own conclusions. If I was Judas, I would be hearing, like, if you read through the things that Jesus says, I could easily get in the frame of mind of Judas and be like, all right, like, he's going to overthrow Rome. Like, he's going to kick them out. Like, something is going
to
happen.
Or even for a zealot to follow someone.
Yep.
Why?
Was a bit
is possibly from the conception of the following itself, mm-hmm. he was doing it.
Yeah, and he wasn't the only one.
Right.
Simon was a zealot. Like, he's explicitly called Simon the Zealot.
Yep.
Like, so it... at least one disciple and probably two are zealots. And what Jesus was saying was very attractive to them. And they stuck with him because it was feeding into this understanding of like, yeah, this is going
to
happen.
And you're the complexity.
Do what I want you to do kind of thing.
What I... And like the complexity of it though, too, is that Jesus didn't correct them.
Yes.
I just want, like, there's something in there that's like, oh, it's so easy to say, but it isn't about politics. No, but Jesus allowed them to follow him in the same capacity everyone else followed him.
Yeah.
And that's a really beautiful thing.
So I could see two different things happening here. One, in the previous few days, he sees Jesus not going after Rome, but going after the chief priests and the religious leaders, which is the wrong enemy according to Judas's mindset if he's a zealot. And he gets to the point where he feels so fed up and betrayed that he betrays Jesus. Huh. I could see that.
I haven't ever heard that one before. Yeah.
Or I could also see Judas getting really impatient, and he's like, when is something going to happen? And so he kicks something off to force Jesus's hand. He's like, stop talking. Do something. And he kind of gets the ball rolling earlier than anticipated. I could see a couple of those two things happening.
Yep, exactly.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely bend towards that second, the second thing, because you have to take into account how Judas felt following things didn't happen how he expected.
Yeah,
and then he commits suicide.
Yep.
And there's this thing of guilt there.
Oh no, what have I done?
Yeah. Here's a question I have, and it's something I think is kind of fun, and it's a very simple question. If Jesus is this public figure, he is out in public a lot. People see him. They all know who he is. Mm-hmm. How did Judas betray Jesus? And there's this thing of like, so Judas is pointing him out.
But he's there, yeah.
And I just, that's something I often think about. It's here's this public figure. Is it because he's finding him in a place of privacy so that he can be taken in secrecy? Why did he have to point out Jesus? Did people not know him? All of those things I think about. So tell me the thoughts.
I default to the secrecy thing. I think there's a couple passages where it says it's like, it was on the same day that the chief priests, they kind of like get together in like this private meeting and they say, like, we need to kill this guy, but it's Passover.
Right.
Like, we can't do this right now because like the population of Jerusalem has doubled and the general population is like, has a positive attitude towards this guy. Like, they think he's a prophet at the very least. So they're looking for an opportunity to do this quietly. And so Judas, he, like you said, it's like you could probably find Jesus pretty easily.
Right.
But to know the time and the place in a secluded area where no one's awake to get him, that would be the valuable information that they would need the inside scoop for.
So then the question becomes, how does the public posture change so quickly from, I have to capture this guy in secret because there will be an upheaval, to Jesus will pop out on the other side and is on trial and people hate him?
Yeah.
Is it a vocabulary of fear or posturing of fear? Those are questions that I have. And then, the perspective of Judas from a place of compassion, because he is a zealot, mm-hmm. Someone who has been hooked into the politic agenda, the Bible continues to say, even after like the apostles have scooted on, they call him Judas the betrayer. Mm-hmm. There aren't disciples who plead his case on behalf of the kingdom.
Yeah.
It's Judas the betrayer. And you can almost like see them spitting on the ground as they say it. Mm. And they find someone else to take his place. I don't know. There's a bunch of those kinds of things. But as I think about what Judas was doing or what Judas was trying to do and how he betrayed Jesus hypothetically for 30 pieces of silver.
Yep.
It is very apparent that in the Gospels, the silver is not important to Judas at all. Mm-hmm. Because there's this bigger heartbeat that he is tied into, that his purpose is, and how Jesus acts does not affirm that vision that Judas had for Jesus. Can someone have a heart for Jesus and betray him?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say so.
I'm trying to bring this to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, like that's one.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We're all guilty. Yeah.
Can you give us some practical examples of how?
Like yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I betrayed Jesus any time that I operate out of anger instead of compassion.
Right.
I betrayed Jesus every time I judge someone. For something that like, it's just like I betray Jesus.
That's
kind
of what stumped me. It's like, there's so many ways. It's like, pick one. It's, and whether it's like internally from a heart place or like openly or I don't know. Like, I think there's even more tiers to it where it's like, I don't know. We're in positions where we are like. Look to lead people in a spiritual way. Like we are representatives of Jesus, but everyone who follows Jesus is a representative of Jesus. And then you get into the role of like parents, like being a mother, being a father, trying to like represent Jesus to kids. And like, I don't know, I get stumped by that question because it's like,
it's so
hourly,
it's so big, but how often during this time is it probably said by people experiencing this story, how could anyone have done that to Jesus?
Yep.
And how could anyone sell Jesus
for just 30 pieces?
Yeah, it's like, man, people sell Jesus all the time.
Yep.
People betray Jesus all the time.
Yep.
And this is the... this is the place of Spy Wednesday that it asks you point blank, how do you sell Jesus? Mm-hmm. How do you betray Jesus?
I was looking into how different faith traditions kind of honor, sit in this day, and I think it's mainly within the Catholic Church that they have these things called tenebrae services, which is Latin for darkness. And at the evening mass, they have this candelabra of, I don't know, like 14, 15 candles. And throughout the service, periodically, they extinguish some of these candles. So towards the end of the service, there's just one candle left, which is the representation of Jesus. And they take the candle and they hide it behind the altar so the place is completely dark. And you could do this a bunch of different ways, but somehow they make a very loud noise within this pitch black room. They could be banging hymnals against the pews behind it, just to symbolically kind of like bringing it back to the bigger picture here of kind of the story that we're within this week of like things are getting really dark and something momentous is occurring here and we can't see it.
Isn't it crazy that though, I mean, that just a few days ago, it was like the victory parade.
Yep.
And then like Stetson brought up, things are going to get bad, but the disciples have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
But by the end, by Saturday, their teacher is gone, and he was killed on public display.
Yeah.
And one of their friends hung himself.
Yep.
And everything seems to be all upside down, and there is no hope.
Yep.
That's it. That's by Wednesday. Hey, thank you guys, and join us tomorrow. And if you have not subscribed, please do that. We're going to continue these as we go into Easter. And we will see you tomorrow.